All right, this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti. And this week on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. All right, this week we have Citizens Climate Lobby, Julie Amon and Milton Takei from Citizens Climate Lobby. They have a bill that they're putting before Congress that is going to tax carbon. So we're going to hear all about that, on why we should be taxing carbon to encourage alternative technology. So that's coming up here on Talk is Cheap on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. Julie Amon and Milton Takei from Citizens Climate Lobby. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ SSD. I'm with Julie Amon and Milton Takei from Citizens Climate Lobby. All right, you guys are on. What is Citizens Climate Lobby?
Well, thanks for having us, Craig. I would like to talk a little about Citizens Climate Lobby first, and then about the bill that we are supporting in Congress. So, Citizens Climate Lobby is a grassroots, nonpartisan climate advocacy organization. Our focus is on fair, effective, sustainable climate change solutions. And the bill that we support, Carbon Fee and Dividend, is called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act in Congress. We have 190,000 members in the U.S., 463 chapters. In Oregon, we have 3,869 members. And it's also, it has chapters around the world. We are in 44 countries. Citizens Climate Lobby, we're working to build a broad consensus. And our technique is to use respectful conversational relationships and good listening to our neighbors, our community, the media, and elected officials. Citizens, CCL for short, encourages and trains regular folks like you and me to advocate for effective legislation. And for me personally, joining CCL has helped me move beyond hand-wringing and keeping my head in the sand about this important issue. And I was impressed by a story I heard on the radio about the day-to-day kind of relationship-building work they were doing. And I was also impressed by their focus on optimism and solutions. And I became involved by going to meetings and tabling and being slowly more comfortable in talking to people about the issue. And I have found that people are really hungry for solutions on this issue, and they don't know what to do. But they're eager to talk about it and to come up with good ideas. I sure don't know everything, but CCL has helped me move forward from not knowing what to do, to being active and talking with community leaders and our representatives to move effective climate legislation forward.
Now, well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
If you had a lot of money, you can buy access to members of Congress. But we try to substitute for that through activism. That is to say, if you give money to politicians, they would listen to you. But we hope that with a lot of people being active, we can also have the same access.
Well, and so your website, these chapters that you have, I notice I'm really impressed with the tools. They're calling them the levers of political will, that you train people on how to be effective with to get this bill passed. Can you go over a few of those? Letter writing campaigns?
Yeah, one of our slogans is that democracy is the solution to climate change, and we help train. CCL helps train people to lobby, which actually we meet with our senators and representatives twice a year, and to write letters to the editor in the media, and for a grassroots portion we table and we educate the public about the bill. And Grass Tops is trying to get businesses and elected officials to sign on to the bill and move it forward.
Well, so you actually get meetings with public officials?
Yes. Yeah, we do. And
who supports this bill? Can you name some? I know it's Ted Deutsch is one, and I know Don Cheadle is a supporter.
Well, last year the bill was introduced, and it's pretty much the same bill this year. Last year we got 86 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, so that's a pretty good level of support for a carbon pricing bill. There's a lot of representatives in Oregon that also support it. But first, I'd like to go into some of the details on the bill, if I could.
Yeah, please. This is not cap and trade, right? This is basically a tax on carbon. So, I mean, we want to tax things that we want to discourage, and then that money goes to encourage things that we want to encourage.
That's exactly right. Yeah. The three legs of this bill are to put a fee on carbon. And it's a gradually rising fee. It starts at $15 a metric ton per CO2, and it rises $10 each year. And this gives a consistent and predictable price increase to carbon. And all that money is collected, and it is given back 100% to the American people in a dividend. And that is a monthly check. Based on the total amount that's collected. Adults get 100% and children get a 50% cut. The administration fees for this are supposed to be right around 2%, so very little. And then the third leg of this stool is the border carbon adjustment, which when we have products coming into this country that are not subject to a carbon fee, we put the fee on them there, so we don't have unfair competition from other countries.
It's a kind of a tariff. In fact, the European Union is preparing to impose a similar kind of tariff on countries like the U.S. who don't have policies as strong as they do, and hopefully it'll go into effect in 2023.
All right, and so this is to encourage good practices and then to give people the money that they would be able to then spend the money, presumably, on things that might cost a little more, but they are done with good practices. Until the economies of scale take over and the playing field is leveled. Is that correct?
Yeah, the goal we're going for is net zero by 2050. So, and to get there, we need a lot of affordable clean energy. And business is part of that solution because they can innovate based on this rising price of carbon. There's going to be a lot of opportunity for innovation.
And plus, individuals who have to pay higher prices will have an incentive to use less energy, say, and even if they don't believe in human-caused global warming, they'll still have that incentive.
But yeah, and but you're not forcing, you're compensating them for their for doing that, for their this is progress. We're moving to a different type of technology, and you're compensating people for doing that rather than just regulating and forcing them to do it.
Yes, and we've had this this bill looked at by two independent agencies, a REMI study and a Columbia study, and they have shown that 70% of American people will be better off or at least remain equal, whereas the cost, the rising cost of energy will be met by the dividend. So folks that are on the, a little bit lower on socioeconomic scale, they're going to be supported by this bill.
Supported more so than the wealthy.
Yeah, the wealthy will presumably be able to just pay the increased cost, which you might say is unfair, but at least they'll be paying the fee or the tax. And the low-income people will be getting mostly more back through the dividend than they have to pay due to the fee.
All right. Well, your website is saying 95% to the poor, but what? But they are going to be healthier, so they're going to save in health costs, and they're going to save in the on the social end. There's a social dividend that is not included in that 95% that they're going to benefit from.
That's a good point. Yes, cleaner air. There's some plants maybe will stay open, but I think eventually we'll have a lot cleaner air because, say, less coal burning.
And better neighborhoods, less noise, and these technologies tend to be greener technologies. The reason they call it green is because you're going to see more green. You're more going to see more plants and things like that that people need to have a healthy lifestyle.
That's right. Yes, and studies show that up to 4 million American lives can be saved over the next 50 years with implementing this carbon fee based on just cleaning up the air. For instance, coal, the use of coal goes down rapidly as you put a rising cost on carbon, and coal is one of the most polluting sources of energy that we have right now.
All right, and so you're trying to get this bill passed, so you're trying to make it as broad and as you can. So you're not actually telling anybody where this money is going to be spent.
Well, people will decide for themselves how they spend the dividend. That's for sure. There's no restrictions on how they spend their own money.
All right, but when it goes through, go ahead, Julie.
The entire dividend does not go to the government. It goes back to the American people 100%. So the American people are the ones in the driver's seat deciding what to do with their money. Many of them, most of them, will decide to buy and use products that are going to be less carbon intensive because it's going to save them money.
Now, for example, you know, people want to buy a new car. If they predict that their gasoline prices will go up, but maybe they'll consider a different car, a car that gets better mileage, for instance.
To get more bang for their buck, they're gonna tend to buy a high mileage vehicle. But you can theoretically buy a giant truck that isn't very fuel efficient, but maybe you need that.
Yeah, but you have to pay though. You'd have to pay.
Right. And you would use up your dividend faster that way.
You would use it up faster, but that would be your choice. Perhaps you need to make that type of decision for the next 5 years until you can move your business or whatever forward and buy something that has a better carbon footprint, or the innovation will catch up to you and you can make better choices.
Right, but for instance, it doesn't go directly to cities' public transportation. But when the bill goes through, the Congress may change a few things as it goes through and may direct some of that money.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, in the process of becoming law, we really don't know what change would be made to our proposal. I mean, at least part of the money would have to go to some kind of government project, it would seem, because we might need to use a process called budget reconciliation, which allows a bill to be passed with only 51 votes. And that to do that, the provisions have to affect the budget. So we've not given up on getting 60 votes in the Senate, though as far as we know right now, we don't have those 60 votes. That's called regular order when you need 60 votes to overcome the filibuster.
There's nothing in this bill that prevents supportive legislation to go through. For instance, there might be something put together for supporting coal communities. But our focus is on getting a bill through that is going to lower CO2 fast and quickly while supporting a dividend to help support people. But it can use a variety of supportive legislation.
But the main goal is to get us off carbon and over to something else and to compensate people for doing this. All right, and there's some things that we're talking about the Clean Air Act in the past. How is the Clean Air Act affected by this?
Well, I think you're talking about the EPA regulations that Mr. Obama instituted to use regulations to reduce the carbon pollution from power plants. Now, the previous version of the bill had what we call a regulatory pause, where the EPA regulations could no longer be used unless the bill failed to meet its targets. But even though many people seem to object to this regulatory pause, it's hard for me to understand why, because the bill would go so much farther than the regulations. And besides, the U.S. Supreme Court is likely to strike down any regulations that go farther than the Clean Power Plan, which Mr. Obama put into place. Of course, President Trump has his own regulations, and Mr. Biden will have a third version, and the Supreme Court will have to sort all that out. But maybe a Republican might want to have the pause put back in as a condition for them co-sponsoring the bill. That's a possibility. It's really interesting that Democrats seem to just love regulations. Republicans tend to hate them, right? And the regulatory pause was an attempt to win over Republicans. But a lot of Democrats seem to really object to that. I think that's why Mr. Deutsch took it out of the bill.
All right, but it would clean the air the same way that the epidemic has cleaned the air because we're using it less. Because we would be using this technology less, theoretically, it would actually clean the air more, because that tax, that's how effective that tax is it's going to decrease use and thereby cleaning the air.
Yes, and we get a 40% reduction in CO2 levels in 10 years and zero by 2050. This is better than the Clean Power Plan. This is better than the Paris Climate Accords by far. And it also has a measure that if after 5 years, I believe it's 5 years, if the carbon price is not meeting its goals by zero by 2050, you can increase the cost of carbon to meet it.
Right, and so one thing I forgot too is it actually creates jobs too. In addition to compensating people 100% for their energy bills, for the increase in energy bills, it is going to create green jobs.
Good, green jobs are more labor intensive than the jobs in the coal and oil and natural gas sector, and so it does increase. It does increase jobs because green jobs will hire more people. And the whole aspect of the innovation lighting up the economy, we can't even predict that. But it looks very good that it's going to be a net gain for jobs for Americans.
Yeah, I think the important point is that our proposal would not hurt the economy. Sometimes people complain that a carbon tax or fee would do bad things to the economy. Well, you give poor people money, they tend to spend it, say, in a bar. That's one little bit of a economic stimulus, probably not much. But, like I say, overall, it shouldn't hurt the economy.
Well, and frankly, these tax and spend concepts, I don't really care. It's not so important what they spend the money on. It's more important that the bad technology costs more, and you're leveling the playing field with good technology.
Yeah, that's correct.
So, well, how do you ensure that all this money goes back, goes to the, you mentioned the administrative costs. How do you ensure that this revenue is all paid out?
It doesn't go into the government. It stays separate, and 100% gets paid out to the American people minus the administration costs. So it doesn't add to the deficit, and the estimated costs of administration are only 2% a year, so it's very little. So part of this bill is to be very transparent and easy for people to understand, so they know where that money's coming from, and they will be getting it every month, so they can rest assured that if their energy prices are going up, they can be protected.
Well, and they've done studies. This is the problem with supply-side economics, is when you put the money at the bottom, when you give money to people at the bottom, even if you're giving it to welfare mothers, they tend to spend that money rather than giving it at the top, where they tend to put it in the bank, and it's taken out of the economy. So you're putting money into the economy. Was there something else, Milton Takei, that you wanted to say about that?
Well, I'd like to point out that one possibility is that part of the tax or fee might go to reduce the deficit. Maybe some Republicans would like that idea, but it's all up in the air now. We don't really know what's going to be in any climate bill. We don't know if there's going to be any legislation fighting global warming in a big package that would go through budget reconciliation, just requiring only 51 votes in the Senate.
All right, and then anything on the way this thing is ramped up? It's 15% at first. And then there's a certain amount paid out. Can you give me some details on how it's ramped up?
It's $15 per ton of CO2 produced in the first year, and then it's $10 increase every year after that.
But the payout is staggered too, isn't it?
The payout is dependent on how much is taken in. And so I don't have that with me. There are a lot of charts that we can tell exactly what the payout would be for a family of four, for instance, by the year 2030, or it'll go up. It'll be kind of like a bell curve. It'll go up and up and up and then start going down again. And as people... Well, I don't know how to put that. As people change their habits and we start getting our energy elsewhere.
All right, and I noticed your website has a whole, it's citizensclimatelobby.org if you want more information, and you can contact my guests, Julie Amin and Milton Takei, by going to citizensclimatelobby.org. And it has a bunch of... all kinds of educational tools and very sophisticated website. I'm really impressed. But also, I noticed there was a, which I may play this in the future on this show, that talks about how it affects, how climate change affects, and we're not going to get into whether climate change is real or not. I think we've spent enough time. We all know that this is real. And we don't want... It's silly to use one fuel when my thing is it's silly to rely on one fuel. First of all, when you have a nuclear power plant in the sky, I don't need to rely on fossil fuels, and they've had their day. But how does it, anything on how, and we're going to get into that in the second half. We're going to get into more of that. But how does it affect the poor, climate change, what are the effects on the poor? Have you got statistics on that or anything on that?
Well, it benefits the poor in three ways. The poor will get the same dividend, but since their carbon footprint is smaller, they're going to come out ahead. The poor or frontline people tend to live closer to dirty air, and the faster we clean this up, the more that they will benefit. And globally, the poor are more vulnerable to the effects of global warming. So the faster we enact a strategy to reverse that, the better off they will be.
Well, the poor have less impact on the environment. It's surprising. I mean, that's something that you wouldn't think that... Because of the images that they always have of slums and things like that that are dirty, the perception is that poor people are harder on the environment. But actually, because they use less resources, because they can't afford to drive big cars and they can't afford to use the resources, they are actually have less impact on the environment.
That's right. It's not their fault, and they have to pay for it anyway. The CCL's founder's name was Marshall Saunders, and he worked to do microlending to the poor. And when he realized that climate change was going to erase all his gains for the poor, he started CCL to use his strategies that he used to get money for the poor, which was kind of making relationships, long-lasting relationships with members of Congress. To support his bill, he wanted to show everyone that works really good for this, too. This is important legislation that needs to move forward, and we can all work together to get it passed. Regular citizens, you and me, can work to get it passed.
And that was his whole thing, that he saw that he needed to organize large groups of people, is how to get this stuff passed.
Yeah, and that a grassroots approach really is effective. Our legislators... will listen to people. In fact, they're hungry for hearing what we think.
All right, let's take a break here for a minute. You're listening to KEPW. This is Talk is Cheap on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. I'm talking with Julie Amon and Milton Takei of Citizens Climate Lobby. They have a bill that is one of many that they're trying to get through Congress to tax carbon, because we need to get off fossil fuels and move to alternative technology. And that's how this bill is intended to do. So we're going to wax philosophical when I get back here. We're going to talk about and try to get you on board if you're on the fence about this. So that's coming up here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Okay, the show is Talks is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti. I'm talking to Julie Ammon and Milton Takei of Citizens Climate Lobby. They have a bill before Congress called the Innovation Carbon Tax Innovation Act.
Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend.
Wait, say again?
Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act.
All right, so what Ted Deutch just reintroduced, you've introduced this thing three times in the Congress, right? And Ted Deutch just introduced it again?
Yes, that's correct. And we wanted to reintroduce it before President Biden comes out with his big climate plan at the end of the month. And it already has 28 co-sponsors. Last year's version had 86, so it's pretty popular. And we hope people that are listening and agree that this is a good move forward will contact Representative DeFazio and encourage him to be a co-signer.
Well, so that's just it. Biden's coming out with something on the on Earth Day. So does it sound like he's going to be doing carbon taxing?
I think we just don't know. And we've been trying to encourage people to send postcards to Mr. Biden. I mean, Janet Yellen has said that she favors such a price on carbon, and she's, is she Secretary of the Treasury now? I can't remember her exact title.
Right, yeah, she was the Federal Reserve head. Now she's the head of the Treasury.
Yeah, Janet Yellen has come out in support of carbon pricing and has even mentioned that Biden also supports it. John Kerry has come out in support of carbon pricing, and he is heading up Biden's climate efforts, isn't he?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he is. And then
I forget what his title. He's the czar, isn't he? The climate czar.
Yeah. They just hired Noah Kaufman, who's an economist at Columbia University, who came out with a study of our bill a couple of years ago that shows that it is in line with the IPCC, IPCC came out with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They came out with what we need to do to keep under 1.5 or 2 point degree increase in temperature. And Noel Kaufman did a study of our bill that showed that, yes, indeed, it would. Our carbon price is robust enough to keep the temperature below that.
Right, and so what about Oregon? What's going on locally in our legislature?
Well, what really speaks to our grassroots work is that the Oregon Senate passed a joint memorial, urging the federal government to pass climate change, and our people went around and talked to all our local senators and congressmen in Oregon and asked them and told them about our bill and asked them if they would endorse it. And many of them did. And they voted in the Senate to put it to a floor vote. And it passed overwhelmingly with six Republicans joining the support for it. So the wording of that is that the reasons for the bill are important. It works. It's good for people. It's good for the environment. It's going to spur innovation, and Congress needs to act ASAP to move this legislation forward.
Well, but is that the joint Memorial 5 that you're discussing, that you're talking
That's
about?
Right, yes.
We need to create the perception that carbon pricing is popular. And this act by the Oregon Senate helps do that.
Well, because cap and trade, I notice, is not popular. What's the difference, and why is what's the problem with cap and trade?
Well, cap and trade is kind of hard to explain. That's one of the reasons that we don't push that. It's a system whereby the government gives away or sells permits to pollute, and companies that don't want to change their their system right away can buy permits to pollute from companies who don't need the permits.
So, and then just continue on polluting.
Yes, at least temporarily.
And one of the problems with cap and trade in the European Union was after the 07 recession and the pandemic, the cost for the trading units went down in price. So businesses did not get a rising cost indicator that they had to change their practices. They were playing around with trading carbon offsets. And so they're not that much better than they were. And then they had a big triple increase in costs in 1 year. So that's not, business doesn't like to see that.
Okay, and so that's what I'm getting at. Now we're getting at the allies. So this is where business would be in favor of it, because business wants predictability.
Yes, they want to be able to know how much they're going to have to spend in the future, or how much they can put into research and development and innovation for their future plans. I just wanted to mention that Canada did pass a carbon tax and dividend, and they had an election after it passed, and it already went through an increase, and it withstood the election. People are generally pretty happy with it. And 70% of the population is equal or better off with the dividend. And so there's a great example right to our north here of a carbon fee and dividend plan working.
And like I say, it's more predictable for businesses rather than these carbon cap and trade. All right, so again, allies, you know, recently there was this whole thing with the truckers up there that we were going to increase their fuel costs. And Kate Brown didn't seem to get is that the Trucker Association, actually Big Truck, actually is in favor of increased fuel taxes because that money would be spent on the roads. And so I'm using this as an example of something that you don't tell people what these things will be spent on, but this is something that it could be spent on. In other words, the taxes could go to fix the roads, and then now there is less maintenance on their trucks because the trucks aren't getting torn up by the roads. And of course, we want less trucks on the roads eventually, but politics makes strange bedfellows. And they actually wanted, the Truckers Association actually is in favor of increased fuel taxes. Any other allies that you can think of? And what would you like to see the money spent on the energy? It's the innovation is in the title of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act.
Well, the beauty of this bill is that it's we don't have to say where it's going to be spent on. It's not government directed. It's going to be more fluid than that. It's going to be the money's going to go where the innovation is.
Like I just saw, I just was listening to a lecture on the Green Bank, and this bank would underwrite people's solar panels and take the risk, similar to loan insurance. They would insure people's loans from default, in other words. And this one Green Bank, the defaults were very few because energy people tend to pay this. They would be using the same money that they use to pay their energy bills would be used to pay off the loan. So people tend not to default because they've already allocated that money for these loans. So I know you're not familiar with the Green Bank. I just learned about this myself. But I mean, theoretically, this could be used by the states. This money could be used for programs by the states. But would that have to be written into the bill? Or can states just do that? I mean, the money goes to the people.
Well, a price on carbon would give extra incentive for, say, solar energy, but in our proposal, it's not specified that banks or anybody else has to do it. but they'd have an incentive to do it.
Well, but people would have more money. What is it? The money, I noticed it said $2,500, I think, a year people would get from this. Is that accurate, or is that at the top, or is that in the beginning?
That's not at the beginning. It's that is more a couple of years out. And I'm sorry I don't have that information right in front of me. But because it just starts at $15 a ton, it's not that much in the beginning. Like probably I think it's several hundred dollars in the beginning, and then it quickly goes up after that. But
and those people would be using that to offset their fuel costs, though.
Their fuel costs, but they could budget that into their solar panels, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Or the solar panel manufacturer could factor that in to their contract with the homeowner,
and then have essentially free energy in a way, or even get paid back by the power company.
Yes, that's what we all hope, right?
Right.
Get paid back by the power company.
Well, because my thing is that's the reason. Even if you don't believe in climate change, why would you spend money for a power company to run a line to your house when you can just get, in most areas, you can get energy from the sun, and there's a nuclear power plant in the sky? So I just don't understand why people are not on board with this to get off fossil fuels. I mean, we don't use whale oil anymore. We're not. This is progress. You have to move to a new technology when there's new technology, and when you find out that the old technology is bad. I mean, coal. There's mercury in coal, and I don't think there's any level of mercury that is healthy.
Putting a price on carbon is really nice that way, because you don't have to have a certain ideology to see that this costs less than this, and this costs more than that, and next year this is going to cost more, and your decisions are all people's decisions are going to be going in the direction of a carbon-free future. And that multiplied will help spur innovation.
And then I notice on the website there's a lady that's actually a religious fundamentalist, and she's saying that because politics, like I say, makes strange bedfellows, and so I'm looking for allies. Any campaign, you need allies. So this lady says that her faith says that you can't destroy the earth, so she's on board with it because of that.
Over 50% of Republicans now want some action on climate. And young Republicans under 40 overwhelmingly want action on climate, and they support a kind of a market-based approach like this. So for a popularity, that's a wonderful winning point, that we have a broad support for this. Then it won't get switched at the next election. It'll be maintained and supported, because we need to keep this going, you know, till 2050.
Well, and you say a market-based, this is kind of a middle-of-the-road type of approach. This isn't an extremist approach, because an extremist approach would be to nationalize all the energy industry, would be socialism, or to heavily regulate that. Unfortunately, regulations, you know, these guys don't go to jail for these regulations. They're just fined, and they just pass that on to the consumer anyway and cause higher prices anyway. So I noticed this is kind of a Keynesian approach to this, where you are you're using the market and taxing and then spending that money on solutions rather than regulating or nationalizing the industry. So it's kind of a, and again, I'm looking for allies here. It's kind of a capitalist approach. It's not really a socialist approach. Is that accurate?
Well, one of the problems with the Clean Power Plan, which the Obama administration put into place with executive order, I believe, is that it got challenged in the courts, and most of it was revoked. And so regulation is more contentious, especially in the government that we have right now. regulation in general takes about 6 years to get through, and this would be pretty complicated regulations that you're talking about for all the whole power sector and this and that. And the beauty of the carbon fee is that it generates change in all aspects of the economy that are linked to high carbon use.
Our proposal would not increase the deficit, so it's not Keynesian in that sense.
So, explain that, I'm sorry.
Well, Keynesian economics involves running a deficit to stimulate the economy.
Right, you're paying for what you're doing.
Yeah, in our case, the proposal would not run a deficit, which might...
So they don't have to find the money to do it.
That's correct,
yes. You've found the money for them.
That's correct, yes.
And so the... All right, let me digress for just a minute here and pound this home. Again, what I'm trying to say is this is called progress. And in a capitalist society, one could say that capitalism is meant to – the government comes in when you're trying to maintain commerce. And you're not maintaining commerce with old technology. We need – and this is the problem with corporations is they don't tend to change – their technology. They tend to stick with one technology. And so this is actually would actually benefit. They're not doing due diligence to their shareholders by not innovating and coming up with new technology and moving on. We've had coal and oil for 100 years. It's time to move on to another technology. So anything on shareholder, it's benefiting the shareholders.
Yeah, some companies are afraid that their use of fossil fuels will harm them in the long run, because they see that the change coming, and they're afraid that their shareholder value, their share value might be at risk.
People don't want to invest in oil. They're diversifying out of oil. A lot of institutional investors. All right. So again, I'm driving this home. Okay. On one more thing, on why you on the conservative side should be in favor of this is. I used to listen to Wall Street Week in Review. This was a very famous show with Lou Rukauser. I mean, this guy actually had power in the markets. When he said something on his show, the market would often respond. And he wrote a book called What's Next for the Economy. And what he talks about in there is instead of regulating people, he's doing just what the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act that Citizens Climate Lobby here is advocating, is to tax things that you don't want, that you're trying to discourage, and then use that money to encourage other things. And this is Lou Rukauser, has advocated for this tax and spend type of philosophy. So I keep asking you the same thing. So anything else you want to say about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act?
One of the ways to describe it is revenue neutral, and that's very attractive to conservatives. And that it is the most cost-effective lever to reduce carbon emissions is also very attractive to conservatives. The 3,500 economists are in support of a carbon fee and dividend, including Janet Yellen and Noel Kaufman, who is on Biden's economic board for carbon change.
Now, we don't have time to rely on voluntary change in behavior from individuals. So the government must intervene to fight global warming. Maybe some conservatives would not like that, but there really is no choice.
Well, and they haven't done it themselves because they've been subsidized. This is switching the subsidy that has already been – they've already been subsidized for 100 years, and this subsidy is now – we need to cut that subsidy and move it toward subsidizing the right type of technology. All right, so Julie Amon and Milton Takei of Citizens Climate Lobby, how do people get involved in this?
The best way to get involved is to go to the Citizens Climate Lobby website and say join. You will get added to an email list, and your local chapter will then contact you. And that's the easiest way to do it. And then on that website, you can look at a little more information that might answer some of the questions that you have.
All right, Julie Ummen and Milton Takei of Citizens Climate Lobby. Anything else you want to say before we end?
Well, thanks for the opportunity to explain this to people. I think that the more people know about it, the more people will be on board, and we can convince Representative Peter DeFazio to be a co-signer, because that's the local action here that would have a lot of impact.
All right, write letters, people.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. This is KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kpw.org. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
This is Rick Shetter. KillRadio.org. Here's more from the Cancun WTO demonstration in September of 2003.